The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome everyone to a live recording of Trump's Trials and Tribulations, New York Trial Dispatch. Today is April 25th. I'm joined by legal fellow and courts correspondent for Lawfare, Anna Bauer, and our editor-in-chief, Benjamin Wittes, who are fresh from court today, where I was not, sadly. I'm having some trial withdrawals, I think. So, Anna, I would love to start with you. What was it like today? Give us some color. Help me out with my FOMO.
Today was our first full day in court, so that was exciting. We previously had some shorter days because of Passover and then also because of a juror's toothache. So today was the first kind of long day. I did not see any jurors who fell asleep. I, at one point, apparently almost caused the Secret Service to have a heart attack. So that's some fun color for you. The reason being that when Trump either comes down the hallway or is on the move, they don't like people to be in the hallway. And whenever we are on a break to go to the bathroom, everyone's kind of scrambling because usually there's a long line. So I was waiting next to the bathrooms trying to, you know, take a bathroom break before I went back into court. And Trump ended up, you know, going into court a little bit earlier than we thought. And so they started to clear the hall. They pushed everyone into these bathrooms. And for some reason they thought there wasn't enough room for me or something. So I was kind of just like stranded next to standing outside when everyone's supposed to be pushed into, you know, a closet or a stairwell or a bathroom. And I kept getting conflicting, orders from the NYPD about where I should go. And one of them was telling me to cross the hallway and go into the stairwell. And then another one was telling me to stay there. And then another one was telling me to go into the bathroom. And then another one was telling me not to come into the bathroom. So I ended up just running across into the stairwell to where the NYPD officer was like kind of gesturing for me to go over there. And later I was told by an NYPD officer who was the, checking everyone in after lunch. He said to me, you know, you gave the Secret Service a heart attack when you ran across the hallway. So, just me accidentally scaring the Secret Service for running across a hallway into a stairwell. But that's the color of the day. It was just a little bit more business as usual. Ben, anything to add?
Yeah, so we did get a second cackle from wonderfully named David Pecker, the witness who testified all day. As listeners will and viewers will remember, the man has a surprisingly awesome cackle. And so we got a second listen to the cackle, which, I would love to record and play for you guys, but that would involve violating the court's rules, and that would be wrong. So maybe at the end of this whole thing, we will do a Lawfare podcast with David Pecker that will be entirely him cackling. But until then, you're going to have to satisfy yourselves with me imitating him.
We could host a Lawfare roast of David Pecker. It's sad to me that he only seems to cackle when I'm not there, but I won't take offense to that. But I know we have a lot to talk about with David Pecker. It was a pretty meaty testimony today. But before we do that, Anna, were there any preliminary matters that we should know before Pecker's testimony resumed.
Yes. So, Tyler, we attended the motion to hold Trump in contempt the other day related to alleged violations of the gag order. We still don't have a ruling from Justice Mershon on those 10 alleged violations. But as promised, prosecutors said that they would include some additional violations in a forthcoming motion. And at the beginning of today, before the jurors came in, one of the prosecutors, Chris Conroy, stood to address and submit to the court some of these additional violations that they're alleging. They involve comments that Trump has made in recent days. For example, to a local media outlet in Philadelphia, he made some of the comments to the hallway pool. That's the, you know, group of press who kind of stand in the hallway and ask and shout questions at Trump as he walks by. And then what else am I forgetting? There's just a few other comments that he's recently made that involve Michael Cohen. He addressed this morning in New York City. He said something about David Pecker and his testimony. Of course, Michael Cohen and David Pecker being witnesses in the case, the argument is that, you know, that's a violation of the gag order. We had this kind of, you know, re-upped motion based on those additional comments. And I believe that there's a hearing that is happening on Wednesday at 2. Am I correct?
I believe so, yes.
All right. So we'll see. So no word from Justice Mershon, based on the motion that was previously argued, but we will see. So that was the first preliminary matter. We also just had a minor thing where there's some ongoing hearsay objections that have been raised about documents that the prosecution wants to admit into evidence. And so before, you know, the prosecution has actually gone through the steps of trying to admit them during the trial, the defense has raised some of their objections. So there was some discussion about that. And I think that will be an ongoing thing. There's nothing that what this morning was discussed that I think is particularly, you know, interesting in terms of those documents. But there was later a discussion that was a little bit interesting involving some text messages that Dylan Howard had been sending. And that's the former editor-in-chief of National Enquirer, who we don't believe will testify in this case because it seems that he's unavailable. He lives in Australia and apparently has health issues. That means he cannot travel. But he is very involved in this story, was very involved in efforts to, you know, suppress some of the negative stories about Trump. And he apparently had some text messages with a relative. And so there was an ongoing discussion about that in terms of some of these hearsay issues. And I should mention one of the text messages, for example, said something along the lines of, it was after when Trump was being elected president around that time. It said something like, well, if he's elected, I'll get a pardon for electoral fraud or something to that effect. So Justice Mershon ultimately said that these text messages could not come in. They didn't fall under a business records exception to the hearsay rule. They seemed like a private conversation between him and a relative. And neither the person that he sent these texts to and neither Dylan Howard will be available to testify and be subject to cross-examination at trial. And so therefore, there's a confrontation clause issue, which of course, you know, the confrontation clause gives the defendant a right to confront witnesses against them through cross-examination at trial. So that is all of the preliminary little evidentiary matters that you need to know.
So we had a few hearsay objections. We had, additional contempt counts. But the main event of the day was back to David Pecker. And if Michael Cohen is the so-called star witness to the media and others, I think it's safe to say to Ben, David Pecker is the star witness. So Ben, what jumped out at you today? Where did he pick up this morning?
Yeah, so first of all, I mean, you were joking, Tyler, I think, but actually the prosecution has made a strategic decision that they are going to use David Pecker as their main narrator. And not Michael Cohen. And there are a few reasons for that, some of which have to do with Michael Cohen, which is that he's a convicted perjurer and he clearly has an axe to grind against the president, the former president. But there are also positive reasons of that related to David Pecker, which were very much on display today. So I think the technical term for David Pecker is an ungodly sleazeball. And he kind of lives it, you know.
But Ben, remember, he doesn't want to be associated with porn stars. That is the reason why he said, we'll get into it, but he said he didn't want to pay for the Stormy Daniels hush money because he did not want to be involved with...
Which people laughed at, right?
Yeah, people did. People laugh, but then they got very mad at us in court because you can't really do what people do in the overflow room where you're all kind of like jeering or laughing. They are really strict about keeping it quiet in there. But sorry, Ben, please do go ahead. I interrupted you.
Yeah, so I mean, David Pecker is and the sleaziness of him and his line of work was very, very much on display in some of the testimony today. But on the other hand, he's quite articulate, and he's smart, and he does not have the apparent baggage that Michael Cohen has of, you know, lying a lot, at least not that we've been able to discern. And so he's actually a tricky witness to confront, as evidenced by the fact that Trump's tweet about him or bleat about him was the prosecution was very angry about because they said it was sort of an intimidation effort and an effort to tell him what to do, was about his how nice he is. You know, he's been nice so far, right? So they're even Trump himself is trying to like not quite attack him. And you'll see some of that as we talk about the beginning of the cross-examination. So the prosecution makes a clever strategic judgment that, you know, you want to rely on him for everything narrative that you can get from him. He's the key player in the entirety of the story, except one component, which is the actual falsification of the records. So he can't give you that part of it. But I think they want him to do all the work that he can do. And so we picked up with him this morning on his, you know, you guys had taken him through the doorman escapade. And we pick up with him this morning with the Karen McDougal story. And they walk him through it extremely methodically. It takes most of the day to get through him and her, and then the Stormy Daniels component, wherein, of course, he is less involved because having been left with the check on Karen McDougal, he refuses to get involved in paying off Stormy Daniels. And so they actually had him do a lot of narrative work today. And I got to say, I think he's strangely credible in the way that, in a way that if you'd said, hey, the sleazeball editor or owner of the National Enquirer who, you know, is in the checkbook journalism game and who buys stories by way of protecting politicians, but also buys stories by way of leaning on people like Tiger Woods. Hey, you won't be on the cover of Men's Fitness. I'll get a dirty story on you and then suppress it if you, you know, do a cool cover for Men's Fitness, right? I mean, the guy is a real sleazeball, but he's a very articulate sleazeball. He's a smart guy who knows his business, and I think the prosecution used him to do a great deal of work and basically told the entire story of the indictment through him to the point that I don't even know if they need to have Stormy Daniels testify. I don't even know if they need to have Karen McDougal testify. And so I think they've relieved a lot of the pressure on the on sort of the first three quarters of the story. They still have to tell the story of the falsification of the records within the Trump Organization. So that was, I'll stop there, and we can talk about the cross later. But I thought they did a very nice job, and frankly, you know, cackle and all, sleazeball and all. He is a pretty interesting witness, and I think probably did a lot of work for the prosecution.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, and I'll also say on the point of his credibility, you know, it's not just that he's articulate, that he seems to be consistent, although we're not through his cross-examination yet, and some potential inconsistencies in his statements did come up today. But it's also that these other witnesses we heard in the opening, you know, Stormy Daniels, Michael Cohen, they're attacking them for having this, you know, motive, either hating Trump, and that's the reason they want to, you know, it's a get Trump thing with Michael Cohen. That's what they're, you know, portraying him as. Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen, both, they're portraying as having kind of maybe a financial incentive for kind of being a part of this, anti-Trump, how they're portraying it at least as an anti-Trump prosecution. So they have these kinds of things with Michael Cohen or Stormy Daniels where they're able to question, it goes to bias potentially. Whereas with David Pecker, you know, the last question that the prosecution asked today was, do you harbor any ill, you know, feelings towards Donald Trump? And he actually spoke incredibly fondly of Trump and said, I consider Donald Trump my mentor, and did this, you know, went into this long anecdote involving Boca Raton and anthrax and Donald Trump, you know, calling him up and all. So it's not important to get into, but it was, you know, this story about we're at a very difficult time in David Pecker's life. Like the first person to call him was Donald Trump, and he seemed to really still think highly of him. And seem to be, you know, grateful to him in some respects, or indebted to him in some respects for Donald Trump helping his career. So it was very interesting because they just don't, the defense, and again, we'll get through cross-examination, but the defense doesn't seem to have the same way of attacking David Pecker's credibility from a biased perspective that they do with some of these other witnesses.
At least not yet.
Right. Yeah, no, I also found him quite credible in a sort of self-serving way, and it didn't strike me that it would serve him to lie up there. You know, when he was speaking about how these catch and kill schemes were mutually beneficial between himself and the Trump Organization, that made sense to me. It did seem beneficial to him. So I also found him credible from what I've seen. Tuesday, when he was going through, I think a lot of his testimony were facts that we knew already, that either had come out in the indictment or already in the public, in media, in other trials. And I'll stick with you. Did we learn anything new today? Were there any revelations from his testimony? And we can just stick with the examination by the prosecution for now.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ben, help me out here. There are a few things that stick out in my mind. It's just that I am not sure that these are necessarily, I think we knew a lot of the material facts here. But I think that one thing that is new that I really stuck out to me that I just think is interesting, though I don't think it necessarily goes to, you know, whether Trump is culpable for these charges, but there, David Pecker described this conversation that he had after in 2018, he received a letter from the Federal Elections Commission, related to, you know, an investigation into, campaign finance, contributions, or violations. And he called up Michael Cohen. It related to the, you know, payments to McDougal and to Daniels and that kind of thing. So he called up Michael Cohen and, or not Daniels, but to McDougal. And he called up Cohen and said, you know, I'm worried about this. And Michael Cohen responded, why are you worried? He said, Jeff Sessions is the AG and Trump has him in his pocket, meaning Jeff Sessions, the attorney general. And so that was a very interesting new fact. There also was some discussions about, you know, for example, Pecker going to the White, being invited to the White House. He went, and it's very funny because he also was invited to the inauguration, Pecker was, and he didn't go because he said his wife didn't want to go. And then months later, he was invited in 2017 in July to the White House for a dinner, and Trump invited his wife as well, and David Pecker's wife didn't want to go that time either, but he decided to nonetheless go to the White House, and he brought some business associates, and we learned about this conversation that Trump had with Pecker in the Rose Garden, and Trump, for example, asked him, you know, how's Karen, referencing Karen McDougal. And of course, you know, David Pecker said she's good, she's quiet. It reflected an earlier conversation that Pecker had at Trump Tower with Trump right after he'd been, you know, elected as president-elect, in which Pecker was brought to Trump Tower. He happened upon a meeting of Mike Pompeo, James Comey, Reince Priebus, and who am I forgetting? Sean Spicer. And Trump was receiving a briefing about a school shooting, I believe it was, in Florida. And Trump, when he brought David Pecker into the room, just as the meeting was wrapping up, he said, you know, James Comey, Sean Spicer, Mike Pompeo, Reince Priebus, this is David Pecker, the publisher of the National Enquirer, and he knows more than any of you do. And David Pecker was very glad that he, no one laughed, but the kind of more material part of this meeting is that, again, Pecker sat down with Trump after those folks left, and Trump said, I want to thank you for the McDougal thing and the doorman situation, referring to the $30,000 payment to Dino Sajudin. And then Trump also said, you know, how's our girl? Again, referring to McDougal. And Pecker said, she's good, she's quiet. And so there's this kind of theme of Trump, you know, being really keeping a close eye on, you know, what's going on with McDougal. And really like showing that he had this involvement and concern with suppressing the negative stories. Of course, we have heard about the Stormy Daniels situation. I think that we'll hear more about it, but I think that they really wanted to establish these Trump's patterns or practices of sorts with these previous hush money schemes in order to, you know, make a broader point about the falsification of business records related to the Stormy Daniels scheme as well. So
first of all, longtime Lawfare aficionados of the history of the Trump investigations will remember that January, I believe that's a January 6th, 2017 meeting at Trump Tower, which is the first time the national security staff really briefs at the senior levels, Trump. That is the day that Comey stays back alone to brief Trump on Steele dossier material that it exists. So this is a fateful day in the history of the Russia investigation, in the history, and the idea that sort of Zelig-like David Pecker shows up in it and Trump makes a joke about him knowing more than all of the national security leadership of the country is, I think the technical term is hilarious. I think the main thing we learned today is actually we knew the material facts. What we didn't know was Pecker's kind of emotional reaction to them. And, you know, Anna mentioned one, which was that he actually feels very warmly to Trump. But there's another number of times where he gets very angry about, first of all, being left with the check on the Karen McDougal matter, and the doorman matter, but also about being expected to do it again for Stormy Daniels. And there's a, you know, what sounds like a really kind of intense fight between him and Michael Cohen, where Michael Cohen kind of expects him to do it. And he's like, no, I don't want to have anything to do with a porn star. And by the way, you know, this is not a position I want to be in. And so, you know, the tension between him as a very hard-bitten businessman who's protecting himself and somebody who's quite fond of Trump is very evident in this testimony.
We have about 5 minutes left, so I want to make sure we get in enough time for the cross, or at least the beginning of the cross. So Anna, at what point in the day did we even get to the cross? It seemed like from your tweets we got there a bit late. And then what did we learn? How did the defense start it off?
Yeah, we got there really late. I mean, I was a little bit surprised that Pecker testified as long as he did, but it was late in the day, so we didn't get... I think that we are not very far into the cross, although I'm not entirely sure. I think that we still have a lot of substantive cross-examination to come tomorrow. But Emile Bove, someone correct me if it's Bove, Emile Bove did the cross-examination on behalf of Trump. And look, when we came into this day, we knew we had an idea of maybe what the defense strategy was going to be, because on Monday when Todd Blanche delivered the opening, you know, it seemed like their theme was they're going to try to portray these facts as hush money payments are not illegal. And in fact, it is business as usual, both in, you know, the media, tabloid media industry, and then also for politicians or celebrities to engage with, you know, friendly media companies to either suppress negative stories or publish positive stories. And Emile Bove really kind of tried to start on that point by eliciting a number of responses and asking questions about, you know, for example, the fact that Pecker has had a long time relationship with Trump in terms of suppressing negative stories and publishing positive ones. And so he, you know, says like the first time you came to Mr. Trump with a negative story was in 1998. So it's been 17 years since you've been, you know, helping him, you know, like telling him about negative stories, right? So that kind of thing. And then also, you know, eliciting testimony in which Pecker says, yeah, I helped suppress negative stories for other people, not just Trump. You know, and it was for Mark Wahlberg, the actor, for Rahm Emanuel, the politician, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And I extorted, I used... I got a negative story on Tiger Woods, and I used it to get him to be on the cover of Men's Fitness. I mean, you know, it works both ways. I get negative stories on them without people, without intending to publish them, for leverage. And, you know, the defense kind of brought this all out of him. What exactly, Anna and I were kind of scratching our heads about this on the walk back to the content house, you know, what exactly the point is, like, so you've done this sleazy thing half a million times. Why does that ameliorate when you do it this time? But it does create this, I think what Beauvais is trying to set up here is, you know, you do this for reasons of your own. It wasn't really to help Trump, you know, to interfere in an election. You do it because it's good for business. That's how you make money. And I do think he scored that point to some degree. He also scored a different point, which I want to get in before we have to close, which is when court ended, the judge was quite angry at him because of a kind of dirty blow he had landed about Pecker's memory, and specifically the fact that Pecker hadn't mentioned Hope Hicks's presence at the original meeting in earlier interviews. And Pecker was quite tired by the end of the day, and Bove kind of pulled him with this. And again, it's not entirely clear what he's doing with it. And the judge kind of stopped him under a prosecution objection and then dismissed the jury and everybody went home for the night. So it'll become clearer where he's going with that tomorrow. But yeah, I thought Beauvais was pretty effective in cross-examination, although it's not entirely clear to me what the point he's trying to make is.
One more thing I just realized we missed that's not related to cross-examination but is important. On direct, there were lots of questions from the prosecution about Pecker's understanding of why he was doing things and why Trump was doing things. And one of the key points that I think the prosecution got out is that Pecker's understanding is that Trump wanted to kill these stories for the campaign. And then he also testified to his belief or observations that it seemed like pre-candidacy Trump was more focused on, you know, what was Melania going to think about negative stories about women? What was Ivanka going to think? That kind of thing. But then post-candidacy Trump, you know, that what it was never, you know, mentioning his family. It was more about the campaign. And I think that that's important in terms of, you know, this idea that this was a conspiracy to unlawfully influence the 2016 election.
Although, again, Beauvais' point about that is not entirely without some merit. You know, hey, you were doing it before. Don't be so precious about it once the campaign starts. It's really much more similar than different to your... he kept hammering the term standard operating procedure. And I do think, you know, he made that point.
Well, we'll have to leave you two to continue this conversation off air in the Content House. But for now, I would like to thank you both, Benjamin Wittes and Anna Bauer. Thanks very much for joining me.
Saving money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options. In stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.